Mit Stefanie Rode herzlich willkommen. Slavoj Žižek ist ein undiplomatischer Diplomat des Denkens, kann man sagen. Der slowenische Philosoph versucht, unvereinbare Positionen miteinander an einen Tisch zu bringen und spricht dabei manchmal Klartext, ganz undiplomatisch. So auch in seinem gerade erschienenen Buch Sex und das verfehlte Absolute. Darin denkt der Psychoanalytiker und Kapitalismuskritiker nicht nur über Materialismus ohne Materie nach, sondern auch über die Frage, inwiefern Sex Scheitern ist und was das für das Geschlechterverhältnis bedeutet. An welchen Punkten er da genau Unvereinbares zusammengebracht hat, das habe ich ausführlich mit ihm besprochen. Und ich habe ihn eingangs gefragt, Herr Žižek, Sie werfen der Philosophie ja vor, die großen altmodischen Fragen vernachlässigt zu haben. Warum kommen Sie jetzt ausgerechnet mit Sex als der großen Frage um die Ecke?
That's a nice question, because we are not losing time with. We go to the fundamental question, which is, as you said, I think that till about 10 years ago, we really lived in a, how should I put it, postmodern deconstructionist era. By this, I mean that the direct truth questions were prohibited. All you could do is to ask within what discourse it is legitimate to use a certain notion. Michel Foucault explained this and so on. So philosophy didn't ask directly questions like, what is reality? Is our universe eternal? Do we have freedom of the will? And it's interesting how it started some 30 years ago that if you wanted to raise these old-fashioned metaphysical, as it were, questions, you had to ask scientists. Cognitive psychologists are now trying to deal with, do we have freedom of the will? Quantum cosmologists answer the question, is our universe finite or infinite, and so on. But I think that this split was a tragedy for both poles, for today's science and for philosophy.
Ja, aber Herr Žižek, man muss sich ja schon fragen, warum ist genau Sex jetzt eine so große Frage für Sie?
Sex is for me, I'm nonetheless a German-oriented philosopher. Sex for me is in its most elementary basic structure a mode of failure. You get something, you fail, but then you draw pleasure from this failure itself, which is why I think Freud was right. For example, how do our bodies get eroticized? Let's take sucking your finger. Okay, sucking is first to satisfy your need. Small baby wants to drink milk or whatever. But then all of a sudden you get a kind of a reflexive twist, and instead of sucking in order to get the object that satisfies your need, you turn into act of sucking, and then it can be displaced from breasts to finger, whatever, as a source of satisfaction. How? Even if you fail to reach the goal, the procedure itself gets sexualized in this way. Sexuality has always a structure like this, that something which, like sexuality, had originally, biologically, was meant to serve another need, reproduction and so on, becomes a goal in itself, which is why, incidentally, I never understood Catholics, I have many debates with them, who claim that if you do sex just for sex is animal, that to be human, it must be done for procreation. Sorry, I think precisely animals do it basically for procreation. You know?
Wenn ich das aber, Herr Žižek, wenn wir das zusammenfassen, bitte, ja. Also Sie sagen, Sex scheitert immer oder hat quasi ein Element des Scheiterns. Gleichzeitig haben Sie gerade die Befriedigung beschrieben, die man ja im Zweifel erfahren kann im Sex.
Und viele würden ja, Scheitern selbst.
Ja, aber viele würden ja das intuitiv sagen, es gibt guten, erfolgreichen Sex, also Sex, der gerade nicht scheitert, weil man eben diese Befriedigung erhält. Wo sehen Sie da das dauerhafte Scheitern?
Okay, if you look directly at the structure of sexual satisfaction. First, I think now I will have to complicate even more. Then we can also go into quantum physics, if you know.
Yeah, that's klingt einfach.
Yeah. But first, I use a simple example. Did you see the movie, which I otherwise hate, 4 weddings and a funeral, yeah. Hugh Grant. You know what's my point? That the great love declaration of Hugh Grant is precisely a series of failure or failing to do it. And precisely through this failing, his love for her appears as sincere. All the most intense thing must be said in this way. So I think that love is intimately linked with this. For me, love is part of sexuality. Love enters when you see something imperfect in your partner. And then that's how, it's even empirically proven. I spoke with some behaviorists confirmed to me. You flirt with somebody, you like him or her. Love enters when you notice an imperfection. But then you tell yourself, in spite of this, I love her. Nobody likes a perfect woman or a perfect man. Okay, I know what you are saying. You can have a good, efficient sex and so on and so on. But I would like to take a look at it, if I may, in a more close way. For example, this is for me sex at its purest. In Guardian, a very bright commentator, Eva Weissman, discovered an experience that shocked her. She was watching, they're very interesting, very depressive, a movie about making a hardcore pornography movie, you know, where camera is 5 meters behind and, okay, the guy was making love, the porno actor, to a lady. Then in the middle of it, he stepped back. He said, sorry, I'm losing erection. Can you give me my iPhone so that I take a quick look at Pornhub so that I get erection? And this lady is shocked. Like, what is happening? You have there a real flesh and blood partner, no? But you need the virtual dimension. I think all sex is like this, except if it's done with love. I'm very romantic here. I think that in sex, that's what Lacan means with il n'y a pas de rapport sexuel, there is no sexual relationship. In sex, we, especially men, for us, if it's just sex, we are basically masturbating with a real partner. You do it with a real partner, but you use him or her as a masturbatory prop. You know what I mean? Like, you have a fantasy and you just want to actualize, realize this fantasy.
Und was machen dann Frauen?
There is some truth, maybe I'm wrong, but there is, I think, some truth in this stupid, usually male chauvinist cliché that für Frauen sex is more connected with love. Because I think that this masturbatory structure is more masculine, but that women have much more intense experience of the real presence of the other.
Das kann jetzt natürlich aber auch eine Verklärung sein, ne?
Was meinen Sie mit Verklärung? Genau.
Naja, dass Sie das also mythologisieren, die weibliche Sexualität oder sagen wir mal anders.
I know this danger and here I also disagree, for example, with Peter Sloterdijk, who has in one of his books a whole orgy about feminine orgasm as the ultimate mystical experience or whatever, you know.
Und so meinten Sie das aber eben nicht.
Nein, I even think on the... I think that men idealize women. Sorry, I don't mean it personally, I don't even see you, but let's say that I would be attracted to you, automatically I would idealize you. I would check you if it would not be love, do you fit my fantasy? While women idealize much less the partner. Women have this beauty of noticing all your discrepancies, small, ugly features, and so on. But they, much more than men, they accept you as you are. And that's for me the definition of love. Love does not idealize the partner. Love is this beautiful idea. I take you with all your failures, stupidities, and so on. And nonetheless, you are for me an absolute object.
Also Herr Žižek, das ist mir ehrlich gesagt ein bisschen zu essentialistisch, dass Sie sagen, Männer leben ihre Sexualität so und Frauen leben ihre Sexualität so. Und ich habe das ehrlich gesagt auch ein bisschen anders gelesen in Ihrem Buch, weil da schreiben Sie ja gerade, dass man mit dem anderen in Verbindung tritt in der Sexualität, aber diese Verbindung eben nie richtig aufrechterhalten kann. Also, dass der andere ein Rätsel ist und letztlich Sexualität dieses Rätsel ja offenbart. Und das hatte ich so verstanden, dass das durchaus für beide gilt. Also, könnten Sie darüber vielleicht noch ein bisschen mehr erzählen, inwiefern man quasi im Scheitern verbunden ist mit dem anderen, egal welchen Geschlechts?
I agree here with you. But my point is that precisely this, diese Undurchsichtigkeit der anderen. This is love. Love does not mean I know you totally. But when you say essentialistisch, no, I would have to go more into it, because my idea here is not these are men, these are women, but this antinomy is more masculine, this antinomy is more feminine. You know, I think.
Aber ist das nicht das Gleiche?
No, it's not, because these antinomies cannot ever be translated into a positive form. I don't think it exists a form which would be the full model of masculinity or of femininity and so on. Sexual difference itself is not a difference between two positive entities. These are men, these are women, but it's in a paradoxical way a difference which is in some sense misrepresented, inadequately presented by every sexual identity, feminine or masculine, which is why, this is for me one way to put the failure of sexuality, which is why I am here binary, sexual difference. But empirically, sexual difference means precisely that on the top of men and women, you must have an element which is neither of the two, and which stands paradoxically for the difference in consistency as such. For me, LGBT are not free outside our binary. They live the contradiction as such. They are inconsistent. Not inconsistent in the sense of not fitting any of the two ideas, but inconsistent in the sense that they embody the contradiction that is sexuality. While men and women, more men, for reasons I cannot go now in. You know, this is our spontaneous Altax ideology. They think that difference is a difference between positively existing entities. There are men and there are women. No, there are men and there are women and there are LGBT, which show how sexuality is in itself inconsistent and how every sexual identity misrepresents sexual difference. Sex is basically characterized by a certain impossibility, and they just approach this impossibility in a different way.
Ja, Herr Zizek, und über diese Unterschiede wollte ich gleich mit Ihnen sprechen. Lassen Sie uns ganz kurz noch bei der Frage bleiben der Sexualität, die Sie ja beschäftigt in Ihrem Buch. Und Sie kritisieren da eben, dass die vorherrschende Haltung heute ist, dass Sexualität entweder funktionale Befriedigung ist oder dass sich in der Sexualität so etwas wie ein existenzielles Problem ausdrückt, also dass man entfremdet voneinander ist, konsumorientiert und so weiter. Und Sie schlagen vor, dass das Fehlen von einer existenziellen Verbindung da der Schlüssel sein kann. Und könnten Sie vielleicht ein bisschen beschreiben, inwiefern das die Lösung sein kann in der heutigen Zeit für Sexualität?
What I don't agree with this idea of existenzielle Bestimmung and so on, is this changes sexuality into just a means of expressing another deeper psychic dimension. No, I think everything in some sense is sexuality. I think this is the great answer of Freud. Human sexuality is not animal. Human sexuality precisely occurs when, as Freud put it in his terms, we have to interpret them, when this normal coupling no longer functions, you have to learn it, you have to invent perversions. There is no predestined formula of how to do sexuality. That's the metaphysical dimension of human sexuality. And that's why Freud's implicit thesis is that sexuality is the encounter when we step over natural borders, as it were, our natural determinations. Human sexuality is not biological determination, which we then cultivate, like instead of raping you, I write poems or whatever and so on. No, human sexuality in itself includes Todestrieb, perversions, and so on. It is metaphysical in the sense that it goes beyond our, what we perceive as, animalic dimension. Animals don't have sexuality, I claim. It's only humans that we have sexuality in this strict sense of a deadly passion.
Können Sie dafür ein Beispiel geben, um das konkreter zu machen?
Okay, very naive one. The first great novel of sexuality, the old Greek one, Daphnis und Chloe. What happens there? A young couple is in love and they try to imitate animals and so on. No, an old woman teaches them how to do it, sex. In sex, you never follow your instincts. This is why the point, if you read Freud closely, very simple formula, you probably know it. The point of psychoanalyse is not the meaning of everything is sexual, you know, like behind everything that we do, there is a sexual interpretation. No, Freud's point is exactly not whatever we do, it means sex. It's the opposite one. But what do we think when we make love? And here, our fantasies, our sexual relationship, even when I think I'm alone with my sexual partner, always has to be sustained by a fantasy. Sex in itself doesn't work, so you need fantasies to supplement it. If you want to reach beyond fantasies, it's love. I'm very romantic here. And I don't mean love in any noble, sublime, religious way. As we all know, love can be a very brutal thing, even. One lesson from Freud should be taken seriously today, that sexuality is not some in itself satisfying activity where then, because of patriarchal society, social domination, and so on, violence and perversion enter. No, sexuality is in itself perverted, distorted, and so on and so on. We have to accept this. Love is the most sublime way to turn the failure of sexuality into the acceptance of the other as he or she or it is.
Herr Žižek, Sexualität wirft ja auch Fragen nach der Identität auf. Das haben wir eben schon gesehen. Sie haben damit also auch eine gesellschaftspolitische Ebene. Es geht auch um das Verhältnis der Geschlechter. Und traditionell spricht man ja von Geschlechterunterschieden, also traditionell zwischen Mann und Frau. Aber Sie sagen, diese Geschlechterdifferenz, die verläuft gar nicht da, sondern woanders. Warum sagen Sie das?
Nein, nicht. Not somewhere else, but that's the Hegelian dialectical paradox for me, that every sexual identity is always already, wie soll ich das sagen, eine Verleugnung, a disavowal of difference as such. It mystifies. So I don't believe in identities. I believe in antinomies. So I'm strictly against these clichés, male men against women. But again, what interests me really here is this third term, like LGBT. You know, my favorite saying from Kierkegaard is when he quotes some local humorist who said that all people can be classified into three groups: housemaid, officer, and chimney sweeper. You know, it's a wonderful theory because housemaid stands for femininity, officer for this military men, but then you have a chimney sweeper. So my philosophical problem would be, why are the two not enough, these archetypes? Why do we need a chimney sweeper? Because again, precisely because there is more in difference itself, not difference in the sense of antinomy. What defines sexuality for me is a certain deadlock, a certain antinomy. But so I think that patriarchy is here just one solution, and for theoretical reasons, I totally support Me Too, because I think Me Too is, you know why, extremely important.
Ja, aber Herr Žižek, lassen Sie uns ganz kurz noch bei dem Punkt bleiben, bitte, von der Geschlechtlichkeit. Sie kritisieren ja durchaus auch das, was Sie Transgender-Ideologie nennen und schreiben in Ihrem Buch. Leider sind große Teile der, Zitat, Transgender-Ideologie von dem männlich-obsessiven Verlangen durchdrungen, eine neue Klassifizierung von Geschlechtsidentitäten durchzusetzen. Gleichzeitig sprechen Sie ja gerade darüber, dass sie diese Identitäten, diese Binarität auch nicht anerkennen. Also worauf zielt hier Ihre Kritik ab? Woran machen Sie das fest, dass die sogenannte Transgender-Ideologie da etwas...
I'm simplifying it very much, but the way I know the situation, especially spending till Corona, of course, a lot of time in the United States, no? That's my also problem, this is the book I'm dealing with this, LGBTQ and then plus. All the problems for me, how do we understand this plus? Is this plus an empirical one? And usually it's meant like that. It simply means we shouldn't impose the binary logic, you are man or woman, all other is pathology or a compromise. But their solution is then let's make as complete as possible list of all imaginable sexual identities. And then you get, I don't know, gay, masochist, transgender, asexual, and so on and so on. But you always have a plus. But this plus, I don't read it as, let's be careful, maybe we didn't include some identity. I think plus is a term of its own. You can be ein plus. Plus is not and all the others. Plus is subject itself. If you were to have a complete list of identities, there wouldn't be a subjectivity. We would be just part. Every subject as such means a disturbance of a classification. That's my basic Hegelian point. Hegel says the same when he says that every genus includes itself among its species. You know, like that you have this reflexivity when, for example, Marx said this, what proletarians are a non-class among the classes. This paradoxical element which includes the negation of a structure into the structure itself. And for philosophical reasons, I claim this is subjectivity.
Dann verstehe ich noch immer nicht, warum Sie den Gender-Theoretikerinnen ja vor allem vorwerfen, neue Klassifizierungen von Geschlechtsidentitäten durchsetzen zu wollen. Also, weil das ist ja kein politisches Unterfangen, sondern es geht ja mehr darum zu sagen, lass uns die dekonstruieren, also schauen, inwiefern sie gesellschaftlich hergestellt werden und auch zeigen, dass es viele Uneindeutigkeiten gibt, also dass alles nicht so eindeutig ist. Wo?
Yes, but you know what is my problem? I will try to formulate it as clearly as possible. As far as I can see, the gender theoretical stance is before, at least logically, if not temporarily, before gender differences, there is some kind of a plurality, polymorphous perversity, and then the bad patriarchal logic introduces binary oppositions, oppressions, and so on and so on. I don't think a polymorphous perversity exists. I think sexual difference, not the difference of positive terms, but a certain enigma, inconsistency, self-contradiction is here from the beginning. The tension, the fiasco is here from the beginning. I don't like this anti-binary logic, which tries to construct a pre-repressive innocence, as it were. My basic problem is, where are we today? I think that in many of our societies, we effectively live in post-patriarchal era. I think, although women, I totally agree, are still oppressed and so on and so on, and this is very concrete, I think that already another figure of subjectivity is emerging, which is post-patriarchal. And that's my basic dispute with Judith Butler. I told her, I see the beauty of your theory of this, you know, our gender identities is performatively constructed to playing different roles and so on and so on. But my point is, isn't this how, if I may use this bombastic term, late subjectivity is structured? I think that today, the way society interpellates us, calls us to be ideal subject, it's not be a man, be a woman, be a father, it's be dynamic, make all different experiences, rediscover, reconstruct yourself, and so on and so on. So I don't see anything subversive even in this idea of you must realize your potentials. We are corrupted through and through. I don't think if you take away all the sanction, brutality, and so on, that you will discover something more innocent.
Aber Herr Žižek, also das...
where is your problem? I just
insist
on a stronger role. Bitte, ja.
Also das Subversive kann ja möglicherweise auch in dem Ansatz liegen, zu sagen, lass uns über die Strukturen sprechen. Wir sind jetzt beim Geschlechterverhältnis von Männern und Frauen. Und Sie schreiben in Ihrem Buch von einer formellen Schuld des männlichen Subjekts. Unabhängig davon, was es in Wirklichkeit getan hat, ist das männliche Subjekt schuldig. Zumindest jetzt im Kontext der MeToo-Debatte und den folgenden Debatten. Und den Eindruck schildern ja nicht nur Sie, sondern auch andere Männer. Und ich frage mich, ist das eine konstruktive Haltung, sich da selber als pauschal Verurteilten zu sehen? Und wäre es nicht produktiver, das Problem zu benennen? Also durchaus auch zu sagen, in diesem Diskurs wird mitunter Schuld pauschal einzelnen Individuen zugewiesen, aufgrund ihrer Gruppenzugehörigkeit, also weil sie zum Beispiel Männer sind. Um dann aber in einem notwendigen zweiten Schritt über die Strukturen zu sprechen, die überhaupt erst zu dem Bedürfnis führen, dass man Schuld Männern zuweist. Und dann zu sprechen darüber, wie eigentlich dieses Problem entstanden ist, statt in dieser Opferposition zu verharren und im Individuum quasi zu bleiben und zu sagen, ich werde attackiert und dargestellt als der böse Mann.
Look, I understand, although I must say that things get here much more complex. For example, this is what I'm simplifying it now very much. But did you notice how when you have a racist outburst, if white man commits a racist outburst, he is treated as, you know, nobody would excuse Ku Klux Klan men for lynching or beating black men. If black men commit violence, violent acts, they should be understood it's the result of historical oppression and so on and so on and so on.
Naja, so einfach ist es ja nicht.
No, es ist nicht, aber yes, it's not as simple, but to some extent it is. For example, always, when I debated clear cases or of black violence, always I hear, but once you understand that, okay, you can understand everything. You can also understand Hitler.
Nee, ich glaube, es geht da um einen anderen Punkt. Also das knüpft natürlich an. Die Frage, wie schaut man auf die Menschen? Schaut man auf sie mit einer individuellen Perspektive und sagt, das sind quasi Individuen komplett selbstverantwortlich für ihr Handeln und dann werden sie auch verurteilt dafür, man weist ihnen Schuld zu? Oder schaut man ein bisschen mehr auf die Strukturen und sagt, wie sind die so geworden? Also die Gewordenheit ist ein großer Faktor. Warum haben sie das möglicherweise...
But you know what I would say? Here maybe I will appear as too crazy. I don't think individual men are guilty, but I think that we still live in an oppressive society, male chauvinist, oppressive, in the sense that to simply say I am a man today or to act, to implicitly identify yourself as a man, does involve some kind of a guilt, you know, in the same formal sense as it's a bad comparison.
Aber inwiefern, also Herr Žižek, begeben Sie sich da nicht schon präemptiv sozusagen in eine Opferrolle, statt über die Strukturen zu sprechen?
Nein, but this is the Struktur. Why Opfer? Not Opfer. It's the Struktur. Struktur, it's the same as you can be. There were some, undoubtedly. Let me take an extreme example. Some Nazis, it's possible in some street where honest men relatively will see to what extent and so on. But the structure itself, to be a Nazi, even if you are personally honest and horrified by some things, it's wrong. You are in some formal sense guilty. And in a way, I think it's not innocent. It's too easy to say, yes, we have to see in what sense you are a man, and so on and so on. No, to be a man, precisely at the level that you talk about, to say I am a man means something today. And we have to check that. It's not just enough to be in this liberal sense tolerant and so on and so on.
Und was würden Sie dann sagen, ist zum Beispiel Ihre Rolle als Mann? Also wenn Sie jetzt in dem Buch schreiben von der formellen Schuld eines männlichen Subjekts und es gibt da Szenen, wo Sie auch beschreiben, wie Sie angegriffen werden eben als Mann. Was ist dann Ihre Rolle, diese Debatte weiterzuführen und auf eine strukturelle Ebene zu heben, dass eben darüber gesprochen werden kann, wie man die Strukturen ändern kann?
I see your point. First, I would say that I'm trying to do what you wanted me to do. I agree totally with you that this abstract use of the term men are guilty and so on can often be used in a manipulative way and so on and so on. For example, this is what interests me very much. There also is what one can call corporate liberalism, you know, where the problem are how many percentage of women and so on, as if more women will be in the leading manager and so on positions, then everything will be okay, even if the structure of domination remains basically the same. So I would agree here with you a concrete analysis, but I still think we need to use, I'm not afraid of what you called essentialism. This type of essentialism where essence just for me is a name of some contradiction which is not opposed to the fluidity of everything, but which is precisely the hidden dynamic cause of the fluidity of identities and so on and so on.
Ja, und mein Ansatz wäre ja genau da rauszukommen aus so einer Essentialisierung, also wo man sagt, das Gegenüber ist quasi dann der Mann, der Weiße, dass man aus dieser Essentialisierung rauskommt und gemeinsam spricht über die Strukturen, statt also zu verharren in diesen festen Identitätsbeschreibungen.
I agree with you here, but I would say, what kind of structures, antagonist structures? Here I am a traditional Marxist and also a Freudian. For me, structure is always a structure of trying to deal with a fundamental antagonism. You understand a structure only if you understand its founding basic antagonism. Here I am even a traditional Marxist. For example, I don't know, to understand a state is to understand how a community tries to deal with class difference, with class Unterschied, and so on. And it's the same for me with sexuality. I agree totally with you that sexuality, as Judith Butler emphasizes, is always structured in a concrete way, and I'm here radically pro-feminist. For example, it touched me deeply. I had a nice conversation with some Mexican feminists who emphasized that if we measure the past with today's standard, and we should, then most of the sexual relations in the sense of making love, till maybe 100 years ago, but even later, would be categorized as rape or at least violence in today's terms. I'm not saying now we should play a historicist game of saying, yeah, but this was another epoch, we shouldn't measure it with today's standard. No, we should. Absolutely should. I believe that we have the right to reconstruct from a feminist perspective and so on our past. So I agree with you. All I am saying is that there is, this is very problematic what I'm saying, that's why Judith Butler accuses me of being a Kantian, this immanent structure of antagonism which makes sexuality to be structured. Sexuality is in itself unstable, as it were, always threatening, so it calls for social intervention to bring an elementary order into it. And of course, there are different orders.
Ja, genau. Und machen wir das doch mal wirklich konkret. Also wie man diese Ungerechtigkeiten, ja, auch das Machtgefälle ja in sexuellen Beziehungen ein bisschen verringern könnte. Da gibt es diesen Vorschlag, und der wird ja teilweise auch umgesetzt, ja, von Einverständniserklärungen zwischen Sexualpartnerinnen und Sexualpartnern, also wo es um konsensuellen Sex geht. Sind das nicht gute Wege, dass man Kraft des, ja, und Sie sprechen in Ihrem Buch dagegen, aber ich frage mich, ob das nicht ein guter Weg ist, weil man eben Kraft des Vertrages dann ja gleichberechtigt wird, auch wenn man es vorher vielleicht nicht war.
The doubt I have is that first, of course, not against Vertrag, but you know, in sexuality everything gets sexualized. For example, I spoke with many women who, like, it's not that I'm not talking bullshit. It's not that they want to be raped, but they don't want this explicit Vertrag, explicit form of contract. They claim, if you want contract, go to sadomasochism. This is the pure domain of contracts.
Man könnte es ja durchaus übernehmen und quasi verallgemeinern, so wie man das in Schweden beispielsweise gemacht hat. Also das heißt ja nicht, dass es jetzt etwas Schlechtes ist, weil das aus der sadomasochistischen Szene kommt, sondern man kann ja durchaus sagen, das sind Vertragstheorien und es führt zu konsensuellem Sex, wo man eben bewusst Ja sagt, so wie es in Schweden auch der Fall ist.
Vertrag presupposes that people know exactly what they want. In sexuality, no. That would be my first brutal answer. I'm not saying masculine bullshit here. I'm not saying a woman secretly wants to be raped but doesn't want to admit it. I'm just saying that sexuality is a much more subtle domain where the role of power is very ambiguous. Power can be oppressive. Power in itself can be eroticized and so on and so on.
Und wären Sie dann zumindest dabei zu sagen, dass man vereinbart, was man nicht will? Also wenn Sie sagen, es ist gar nicht klar, was man will, da gibt es quasi keine klaren Grenzen, kann man dann immerhin sagen, yeah, was man nicht will?
No, but wait a minute. I am not your opponent here. I am absolutely on the women's side. I even argued, and here Judith Butler agreed with me. You know what's my answer to this standard male chauvinist point? That, but she was giving me hints that she wants and so on and so on. You know, like, I just did what she wanted when I basically raped her, no? I tried to develop that this is in a way even worse. I don't think the right way is to say you just projected this into a woman. I think that this gap is sometimes a fact. I don't admit to myself that I want something and so on and so on. But if you mobilize this gap in sexuality brutally, you are even more guilty. So I'm here totally on your side. I just want to point out some kind of a marginal ambiguity, but it can also work positively. Like I have a wonderful story from some college in north of the United States where they tried to formalize it totally. They established total rules, like for every step you must ask, oh, can I unbutton the upper button? Can I go down and so on and so on? And it worked, you know why? Because this was not just a procedure to be followed bureaucratically, but these procedures themselves got eroticized, you know. Like, instead of asking a lady, do you want to make love, or the lady inviting a man, they began to use the terms, I have problems with my button, will you help me? The whole, they respected the rules, but this wonderful ironic touch. But nonetheless, you know, the reason, again, if you don't know what you want, this way legitimizes a man to brutally impose himself on you. So my answer to these ambiguities that people really don't know what they want is not, so let's relax the criteria. It's even sharper criteria. So we don't have a disagreement here.
Na dann, das war der slowenische Philosoph Slavoj Žižek im Interview. Und wir haben gesprochen über sein neues Buch Sex und das verfehlte Absolute, das soeben im WBG Verlag erschienen ist.